pushing for voters' approval on a pension referendum to pay down the city of Jacksonville's massive debt. A conversation with the mayor just ahead. Good Monday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Hope you had a good weekend out there. Thanks for tuning in as you start your work week off. I'm Melissa Ross. The show's always live at 9. Make sure to subscribe to the daily podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. And you can now watch the show video on demand at our partner TVJax.com. By the way, get on WJCT's Facebook page right now as we go to Facebook live streaming video with Mayor Lenny Curry. He's here in studio and taking your calls. Lots of calls already. Join the conversation at 549-2937. Then later, how you can dine out for life this week to help people on the First Coast living with HIV and AIDS. Plus, Culpepper on the NFL draft. All of that and more coming up this morning. But first this hour, Jacksonville Mayor Lenny Curry has called it this city's top priority, and he's pushing hard for voters to say yes to a referendum they'll look at this summer, asking Duval County residents to approve up or down a half-cent sales tax to pay down the city's enormous pension debt, over $2 billion. Jacksonville Mayor Lenny Curry joining us now in studio with his thoughts on the pension referendum and more. Mayor Curry, a pleasure. Thanks for being here.
Good morning, Melissa. Good to be with you.
And lots of calls for Mayor Lenny Curry at 549-2937. We'll go to your calls in a moment. Also, your tweets and Facebook comments. And as I mentioned, you can watch this conversation live in real time on our WJCT Facebook page. So this is certainly the priority now in your first term as mayor. Can you share with us a little bit of your thinking as to why it's so important in your view that voters approve this referendum this summer?
Absolutely. This has to pass for the city of Jacksonville. We have $2.7 billion in unfunded pension liabilities. What does that mean to your listeners? What does that mean to the people of Jacksonville? Right now, we spend $260 million a year this year in pension costs. Next year, it'll be $280 million. The year after that, it'll be $300 million. So that's about 30% of a billion-dollar operating budget. What that means is whatever it is that taxpayers care about in this city, whatever their tax dollars are being paid in now to the city, 30% of that, almost $300 million, go to something that does absolutely nothing for them. We are on the brink of a financial crisis right now. What's happened over the years because of all this money going into pension is services have slowly deteriorated, city services. Mm-hmm. We are like the frog in the boiling water right now, and the day of reckoning has arrived.
Is the pot boiling in your view?
It is absolutely boiling. This has to pass.
Okay. What are the challenges of getting this passed when you try to sell to voters, okay, you've got to extend the Better Jacksonville Plan sales tax all the way to 2060, and the only thing you get in return is nothing tangible like what we saw under the Better Jacksonville Plan, which involved capital projects, things people could see?
Well, if we don't solve it now, what'll happen is we'll have to cut more city services so we can continue to invest in public safety, which is a top priority. We need a safe city. But we'll even get to the point where we'll cut to a point, but the budget will continue to be eaten alive by these costs where we won't have the money for public safety. The city will just be not only stuck, but we'll be going backwards. And here's what when I travel around and talk to voters, they've read about this pension. They've heard about it for years. They appreciate me looking them in the eye and telling them, we've got to solve this now. Extend a half-cent tax that already exists. What you pay today, you will pay tomorrow, and you will pay then. It will solve this problem. We're closing the three pension plans that caused this so it doesn't happen again. People are ready for the truth, and they're ready for a solution.
When you spoke recently before the interfaith group ICARE, they were critical of your focus on the pension, saying that the city should be able to pass the pension referendum and also fund other things. You disagreed with them about that.
Well, let me say this. A couple of the issues they talked about were homelessness, which the city, we invest there. In reentry programs, I was just able through my efforts in Tallahassee to bring almost $1 million back for reentry programs. My point is there is no money for new programs right now. It doesn't exist. In fact, this upcoming budget cycle will be a very tough one. I've told my team to look at every dollar we spend and how we spend it. It would be irresponsible for me to present a budget this cycle that's not conservative given the uncertainty around our ability to handle our rising pension costs.
And we're going to go to your calls a little early since there are so many right now for Mayor Curry. The number to join the show, 549-2937. William in Arlington starts things off. Good morning, William. Hi, William. Are you there? Okay, give us a call back. The number to join us, 549-2937. Mary in Riverside. Hi, Mary. Thanks for holding. You're on the air.
Hi, Mayor Curry.
Good morning.
I was just wondering if this is going to change anything for police or firemen.
Let's talk about the police and fire pension fund.
We will close the three pension plans that caused this. So we will, through the collective bargaining process, negotiate new plans that reflect the market and that are sustainable. The existing policemen and firemen, look, the promises were made to them in years gone by. We're going to honor those commitments. Now, this new legislation, if this passes, it will require that all employees, police, fire, and general employees, contribute 10% into their pension, which will be a change. But the other way this will impact police and fire is we're going to have to hire more police officers. I mean, 147 were cut in recent years. We added 40 to my last budget cycle. We added 40 community service officers. We have a long way to go. We still have fewer officers on the street today than we did in 2003, at a time when violent crime and murder has spiked in recent years. So this will give us the ability, if we solve this, to continue to invest in public safety, also to invest in the prevention and intervention piece, which is the Jacksonville Journey.
And speaking of those two things you just mentioned, you recently cut back the lavish pension of John Keene, who runs the Police and Fire Pension Fund. You've also demonstrated a commitment to funding the Jacksonville Journey's anti-crime initiatives. How do you see the budget for that going forward, given the city's financial challenges?
We have to get a yes vote on August 30th on this extension of this existing sales tax and pension reform. Until that moment in time, the budget's going to be conservative. The dollars just aren't there to invest. I believe we ought to invest in the Jacksonville Journey, public safety, prevention, and intervention. But the budget will continue to be crippled. The hard reality is it's just this simple. 30% of the operating budget, again, $300 million of your taxpayer dollars is going to pay for pension costs, which do nothing for you, your infrastructure, your public safety needs, et cetera.
Andrew in Mandarin. Let's go ahead, Andrew. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hi. Good morning. Good morning, Mr. Mayor.
Good morning.
I had a question regarding what I support the plan. I think it's a very good alternative. It's not going to raise any taxes. But what are the alternatives to this if we don't pass? What would be another funding mechanism, or we just have to keep on taking money from the budget? Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for your question. That's a really good question. So there are no other good alternatives. There has been some that have suggested that a new sales tax would be the answer that starts right now, a new half penny. I disagree with that. I philosophically think that's the wrong answer. But let's say someone else did think that was the answer. It wouldn't happen. That would have to go through the Florida legislature. It would be dead on arrival. So that's not an option. Others have said a millage rate increase would be the answer to this. Again, I disagree with that philosophically. I don't think that's the answer.
Why not?
But if someone, I don't think we ought to be raising taxes on people when we have a $1 billion budget that we haven't properly managed in years gone by. What got us into this mess and, you know, $300 million in pension costs to say we're going to go out and raise property taxes, I think would be a bad idea. I'm against it. That said, let's say someone thought it was the right idea and they traveled that road. It's a bad idea. You cannot specifically purpose a property tax increase for any particular purpose. So it would not solve this problem. Somebody could come behind those that made the decision and use those tax dollars for some other purpose. Not only that, it would probably be at least a 3 mil increase. It would have a massive impact on the taxes that people out trying to make ends meet every day pay, people trying to take care of their families. To put a 3 mil increase on them, almost 30%, would just be wrong. It would cripple businesses as well. It'd be a massive tax increase on businesses as well. It's bad for a whole lot of reasons. And in the end, it does not solve the problem.
One of your predecessors, John Payton, raised the millage rate in his second term. He differed with you on that.
No, let's compare apples to apples. We're talking specifically about solving an unfunded pension liability. And if we're going to be serious about this, we have to have a source of revenue that is committed to it and it only. This half penny extension will be purposed only for pension. If somebody raised the millage rate to solve this problem, some elected official would inevitably come behind them and say they've got a pot of money that was raised in taxes and they'd spend it somewhere else. That's happened at the federal level, that's happened at state levels, and that's happened at the local level for years. It's the wrong answer.
Clint at the beaches. Go ahead, Clint.
Thank you, Mayor Curry. You have said a couple of times that the three pension plans are the ones that helped get us into this mess. But actually, it was originally passing the agreement for the pension plans. What is going to be in place to keep us over the next 30, 40, 50 years from passing a law, passing an agreement again that will once again put us back into this cycle?
Thank you. That's a good question. So there was the much debated 30-year agreement. Mm-hmm. Collective bargaining did not happen with the union heads every 3 years as required by state law. A judge has ruled on that. There will be collective bargaining every 3 years. Now, arguably, we wouldn't be in this case had that been happening because every 3 years collective bargaining, the bargaining would reflect the market. That's what will happen now. That's what will happen in years ahead. So we won't be there will be no more 30-year agreements.
If you're just tuning in, lots of calls, emails, tweets, Facebook remarks for Jacksonville Mayor Lenny Curry. We invite you to join the discussion. Lindsay on the South Side. Hi, Lindsay. Thanks for holding. You're on the air.
Thanks. Good morning, Mayor Melissa. I've heard some criticisms that this deal just sort of kicks the can down the road or that it's going to cause the property taxes to go up. Can you help me tell these folks how those criticisms aren't valid?
Yeah, sure. Let's talk about the options available again that some have suggested. First of all, we have to have a source to fund this or the city. The nice way to say it is the city will go off a financial cliff. That day is coming where we will have no money to provide city services, and it's coming soon. So the options that have been laid out are a new sales tax, bad idea that I disagree with, and it would never get through the Florida legislature. So it's really not an option. A millage rate increase today. I've already laid out the argument as to why I disagree with that, why I wouldn't do that. But if someone did decide to travel that road, why it still would not solve the problem. So this is the only option available to us right now other than a financial disaster. This does not kick the can down the road. You have many of these benefits that will be paid in out years. We are securing a source of revenue that will match those benefits in the out years.
Here's an email. We'll go back to all the callers in just a moment. Here's an email from Edward in Jacksonville. Why put this vote in a primary where so many of us who are not Democrats or Republicans can't vote? Shouldn't the vote include the maximum amount of people registered? This is not an emergency where we couldn't wait to vote on this until November. You want to do this in August, the August primary.
Yeah, that's right. We are going to have an incredibly tough budget cycle. I want to get an answer on this as soon as possible. I will present my budget to City Council in July. They will debate it through September. If this passes in August, there's a new reality. There's more certainty. So City Council will have the opportunity to amend the budget accordingly. I'm going to sell this message all over Jacksonville, and I hope that everybody that's registered to vote shows up and votes.
Antia in San Jose. Go ahead, Antia.
My name is Anita.
Oh, sorry, the typo on my screen.
That's
sorry about
okay.
That. Anita.
Mayor Curry mentioned closing the pension plans, and I'm wondering if that refers just to police and fire or if it's all of the city of Jacksonville. And I'd like a timeline of when these are going to happen and if it will be, I doubt, though, before the August referendum.
Okay, thanks for that question.
Yeah, so all general employee, corrections, police and fire, all of those plans will be closed. And if the referendum passes in August, the city will not have access to that half penny to solve this problem until those plans are closed and new plans that are sustainable and reflect the market are open. And that will be done through collective bargaining. As soon as the August referendum passes, I believe it's going to pass, we will begin the collective bargaining process. The important thing for listeners to know, though, is we cannot utilize this half penny if we don't close those plans and open new plans.
So you believe this will pass? Have you done polling that it is giving you confidence that this will pass?
Well, it's going to be a heavy lift. I have no doubt about it. To sell people on the idea that that we've got to solve a pension issue, they wonder how that affects their lives. But I'm going to go out. I'm going to work hard and sell this to every corner of Jacksonville and explain what, look people in the eye, tell them the truth, tell them why this has to happen. This has to be solved now. And I think I'm going to make the case. I'm going to have surrogates working with me. And I believe I'm going to get it done.
How hard is it to convince skeptics who say, well, I don't get a public pension. I'm worried about my retirement. I don't. And people have asked me to ask you this question, as a matter of fact. Why should I vote yes on this to fund someone else's pension when I don't even have one of my own?
Because it's affecting your quality of life. And even though it's not immediately visible to you right now, your tax dollars, if you're listening to this show right now, hear me, your tax dollars going into this city's operating budget are being used to fund pension liabilities. It's crippling our ability to take care of your infrastructure. It's crippling our ability to take care of your parks. It's crippling our ability to hire additional police officers. It is strangling the ability to provide the government services, the basic government services the government is supposed to provide. And those services are your services because they're your tax dollars.
Eric in East Arlington, thanks for holding. Eric, you're on the air with the mayor. Go ahead.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor. Good morning.
Good morning.
My question is this. Two things. One is you're saying that the increase in the sales tax immediately is not a solution. However, we've seen other mid-metropolitan and major cities in the United States go to a sales tax increase immediately over a short term to deal with such issues. And one city, I believe it was Detroit, also started selling off properties that the city owned to also combat the problem. So could you explain why the sales tax increase immediately would not be beneficial? And also, is there an option that the city of Jacksonville has that any properties that we may have can go to contribute to tackling the issue?
Yeah, thanks for the question. Well, I'm against a new tax. The solution that I've proposed is not a new tax. It's a half penny that you pay today, you'll pay tomorrow, and you'll pay then. But as I said before, in order to do any new sales tax, you'd have to go through the Florida legislature. You'd have to get through the House, the Senate, and the governor. And it is not an option. It would never get through. I don't even think you'd get out of a committee in the House. So it's not a viable, it's not a real option.
And you were successful in getting this option through the legislative process, we need to point out, which was not easy, I would assume.
That's right. We were told that the odds were against us, but I went over there and did what I'm going to do to the people of Jacksonville. And as I made the case as to why this is critical, the largest city in the state of Florida right now, both in geography and population, the largest city is falling off of a financial cliff. It's happened over a whole lot of years. There's a whole lot of blame to go around. We got to look it in the eye now, though, and fix it. And that's what I'm committed to doing.
Here's a tweet from a listener. Please explain to callers that in this August election, all voters can vote in the primary election. They just can't vote for party nominees. Thanks for that clarification on that. And let's get in a few more of your calls. Francis in Bay Meadows. Hi, Francis. Thanks for calling.
Hello, Mr. Mayor.
Good morning.
Good morning. I am, you know, you're talking about public safety. There are hundreds and hundreds of people who work for the city of Jacksonville who've made a commitment for 20, 30 years. They've invested their lives in working for this city. The people in this city that don't want to pay pensions for city workers are very selfish. They might be poor. They talk about raising sales tax. Sales tax is harder on the poor than anything. We have a commitment to make to these people who've devoted their lives to working for this city in every regard, not just public safety. There's all kinds of other departments, and the planning department, the transportation department. I can't even think of all of them. But we have an obligation, a moral obligation, to give these people the pensions that they have earned over the years and to continue to provide good pay and good pensions for our public workers. That's my
That's your comment. Okay, thank you for that. That's Francis in Bay Meadows.
Yeah, I would just say that I think the public's frustration, in fact, I know the public's frustration is not with individual police officers, individual firemen, individuals that work for the city. It's with the way the fund has been managed. It's that we're in this $2.7 billion hole that's mm-hmm. costing us all these dollars now. And the John Keane, I mean, that is a prime example of what the public sees every day. And that's where the frustration lies. But look, I'm going to go out and make the case. The future of our city absolutely hinges on this. And I would just ask every one of your listeners, for your city, vote yes on August 30th. Get your family, friends, everyone out to vote. And Jackson will have a bright and prosperous future.
And we have so many calls waiting on hold for Mayor Curry. Let's get a few more of you on the air. Brian on the north side. Go ahead, Brian. Thanks for holding. You're on.
Yes, ma'am. Hello, Mayor. How are you today?
I'm well. How are you?
I had a quick question, but Ms. Francis had already placed more of that on the lines of what I was going to say. But I just had a question for you. Is it your pension part of the city's pension?
I did not take any pensions. I have no taxpayer funded retirement at all. Zero. I did not feel I could be a credible leader on this issue. So to answer your question again, zero pension, zero taxpayer dollars going into my retirement.
Okay. Well, have a good day.
Thank you.
Okay. Thanks for that. William in Arlington. Go ahead, William.
Yes, hello, Mayor Curry. I'm hearing a lot of different opinions on this, and I'm a little confused. Will my tax rate stay the same if this passes in August?
Yes.
Basically, it just extends the Better Jacksonville sales, half-cent
That's
sales
right.
tax. It just keeps going rather than stopping.
That's right. The Better Jacksonville plan, half-penny tax, set to expire in 2030. A vote yes on this will extend it at a period of time beyond 2030. To fully fund these unfunded liabilities.
Kevin on the west side. Calls from all over today. Hi, Kevin. Go ahead.
Good morning, Melissa. Good morning, Mayor Curry.
Good morning.
My question is, this half-cent sales tax, if it continues, and I am in favor of it, especially to create a better public safety issue, which we seem to really, really need, how much revenue does that generate? How does that actually get us in the hole dollar-wise? I mean, is it going to generate $500 million a year? I mean, what is the number so that we can start to see how it's going to whittle it away?
It will generate billions of dollars over a period of time. It cannot go beyond 2060. We believe the pensions will be fully funded at some point well before 2060 based on our calculations. But this does solve the problem once and for all.
And lots of emails for Mayor Curry. Here's one from Richard. I don't always agree with the mayor on all issues, but his logic in this matter seems very well reasoned. That's Richard.
Thank you, Richard.
And here is one from Dave. Mayor, it seems as though you've placed all of our financial eggs in one basket. What if this doesn't pass?
It's got to pass. I mean, again, there's no other solution. There is no other source of revenue that will solve this once and for all. Let me repeat. A new sales tax, I'm against, not going to happen. A millage rate increase, I am against, will not raise the millage rate. And by the way, if someone did raise the millage rate, it wouldn't solve this. It at some point, someone would take that tax increase and use it for some other government largesse. Not on my watch.
Well, we appreciate you stopping by this morning, and we hope you'll come back. Always good to have you on the program. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
We were joined by Jacksonville Mayor Lenny Curry this morning. And much more still ahead later, Cole Pepper with a look at the NFL draft and how the Jaguars are positioned. Also, the delicious details of this week's Dining Out for Life. But up next, First Coast Success profiles Giselle Carson. Back in a moment.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, The suicide rate in the U.S. has risen sharply to the highest level in 30 years. It jumped 63% among middle-aged women. What's behind the alarming statistics, and what can be done to reduce the number of suicides in America? Weekdays at 10, right after First Coast Connect on 89.9 FM WJCT.
Artists, would you like your photography, music, paintings, or poetry featured on WJCT? Submit your work to The Square, an online gallery and competition for local artists. Winners get a quality video produced by WJCT about their work. If you've submitted during a past round, you can submit again. Share your work now at wjct.org/thesquare. Presented by WJCT and Grassroots Natural Market. Relax Radio WJCT 89.9 HD3 is your music station, playing the songs you remember best from the Beatles, Elvis, Frank Sinatra, Barbra Streisand, and Motown, 24 hours a day, only on WJCT 89.9 HD3. Learn more at wjct.org/relax.
Welcome back. Well, she's an attorney, president of our local bar association, and an Ironman athlete. Karen Bruni Mathis of the Financial News and Daily Record profiles Gisele Carson in today's First Coast Success.
Gisele Carson is always on the run, whether as a lawyer and shareholder at the Marks Gray firm, as president of the Jacksonville Bar Association, or literally at a marathon. Carson was born in Cuba. Her international experience is put to use in her legal career, focusing on business immigration, sports immigration, and I-9 compliance and litigation. A former physical therapist, she also was very active, having completed triathlons and a marathon on all seven continents. And she's an Ironman. Gisele Carson, welcome to First Coast Success.
Thank you, Karen.
Talk about growing up. How large was your family, and what did you want to be when you grew up?
Well, let me say, so I'm a two-time immigrant, an only child, and a self-reinventor. And let me explain that. So, as you noted, born in Cuba, immigrated to Canada when I was 15 with my parents, and then later to the United States. I am an only child, which made it a little easier to escape from the Castro regime and reinventor myself because, as you noted also, I transformed my career from a physical therapist to a business immigration attorney, from initially a cyclist to a runner to a triathlete. And in life, in terms of reinventing myself or restarting my life and from Cuba to Canada to the United States. So lots of transformations that really helped shape my life.
You were a physical therapist. Why did you change that into the legal career?
I believe that we should do work that we're passionate about. I am passionate about health. I'm passionate about helping others. I'm passionate about making a difference. I decided to become a physical therapist because as a therapist, one, I was practicing in health, which was part of my interest, and also helping people get better. Patients came to me after a total hip replacement, after a stroke. We sat down, developed a plan, and when they left, they were discharged. They had achieved their goals. They were either able to go back and play golf, or they were able to walk, run, whatever they wanted to do. And that's powerful. When I became a lawyer, business immigration attorney, I wanted to do the same. I wanted to use my interests and experience in immigration to help businesses and immigrants come to the United States and make a difference in their life. Currently, I'm very proud to be able to say that I have helped hundreds of employers and immigrants to, again, develop a plan, decide what visa is best, and make that plan become a reality.
Do you have any observations about what's happening internationally with refugees?
No. I have to say, though, that I am an immigrant. I was an asylee in Canada, and I left Cuba looking for a safer haven, looking for a place that would give me the opportunity and the safety and security that my parents obviously did not believe we had in Cuba, and I was too brainwashed to believe it didn't exist. So there is room and necessity for countries, not just the United States, for countries around the world to open their hands to others in need.
What was your greatest challenge and how did you overcome it?
I tell you, one challenge that I think I have and many have is that internal voice that says, no, you can't. You're not ready. What people are going to think. You don't have enough time. And then the list goes on and on and on. And that's what freezes us from growing and doing other things that we should be doing. But that internal voice always says no. So overcoming that voice, it's critical. And I'll give you an example. First Ironman, Panama City, 2009. And I don't know if you've watched the start of an Ironman, but an Ironman is 2,500 adrenaline-driven athletes at 6:15 in the morning, lined up in the sand, just waiting for the gun to go off to run into the water all together at the same time. You swim over each other, arms, legs, everything is just going everywhere. So there I was, gun goes off, run into the water. I was waist deep and I froze. And I literally turned around and walked back to the sand. And I got there, turned around, and I mean, there was chaos everywhere. And that internal voice that kept on saying, you can't do this. You're going to die out there. I took a deep breath and I said, no, you signed up for this a year ago. And that's what you have to do for an Ironman. You sign up a year ahead of time. You've thought about it. You've trained for a year. You are ready. You have to do this. So I gradually walked back into the ocean, started swimming, 11 and so hours later, crossed the finish line. I would never forget that experience. And again, that experience, every time another big challenge comes into my life, I kind of say, I was able to overcome that. You can do this again. And the more we do that, I believe, the stronger we become by being able to overcome that no in your brain.
That almost sounds like your biggest success as well.
No.
What is your biggest success and how did you achieve that?
Success, again, is relative. Your successes are different from mine. If you worked with me, if you're at Mark Square, whenever we get an approval for an H-1B, an O-1, whatever it is, I run out of my office with the approval in hand or the email cheering and I high-five my staff. Those little successes, they're little, but they're, again, they're impactful for our team. They're impactful for our clients. I celebrate that just as much as crossing the finish line on an Ironman. Celebrate all. Life is short.
Well, Giselle Carson, thank you for joining First Coast Success.
Thank you.
And read the transcript of Karen's talk with Giselle Carson in today's Daily Record. We'll be right back.
Today's First Coast Success was brought to you in part by Iberia Bank.
St. Augustine civil rights leader Dr. Robert B. Haling died on December 20th. I'm Ben Brotmarkle, and coming up on Florida Frontiers, the weekly radio magazine of the Florida Historical Society, we'll hear from Dr. Haling in one of his last interviews. We'll discuss historic Sanborn fire insurance maps and Ernest Hemingway's polydactyl cats in Key West. That's Florida Frontiers, Monday evening at 6:30 on 89.9 WJCT.
The world is people. You love this tune, Carlos. You also play it on your radio program, Radio Familia. What's being said?
So Grandula Villa Morena, big town of Grandula. The people are the ones that do what's best.
It sounds pretty patriotic and proud, as songs go.
It's a very patriotic song, definitely.
I'm Marco Werman. Join us on The World. Weekday afternoons at 3 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, this week you can dine out for life and support the Northeast Florida AIDS Network at the same time. And all you got to do is go out to eat at your favorite local restaurant. There are many to pick from. This is such a delicious cause. Here to tell us more, Donna Fuchs with the Northeast Florida AIDS Network. Good morning.
Hi, Melissa.
And Paige Kelton of Action News.
Good morning, Melissa.
Always good to see you. Okay, Donna, let's start with you. For several years in a row now, at this time of year, we've hosted the Northeast Florida AIDS Network because Dining Out for Life is so popular. Actually, it's coming up on Thursday, April 28th. And this is such an easy way to support this wonderful organization. Can you tell us the details?
Sure, it is so easy. If you're going to eat out this week, we ask that you eat out on Thursday at one of our participating restaurants, and their generosity will donate at least 25% of your check to us. It will cost you nothing extra. You actually benefit. You didn't have to cook or wash dishes, and you got a delicious meal, and you helped your community.
Let's go through the list of restaurants. Paige Kelton, I think you're calling them up right now on your phone. You have a little card with all of them listed.
I do, and I'm on social media, of course, Melissa, talking about being on today's show. Carmine's Pie House is donating 50% of their proceeds on Thursday, as well as Lola's Burrito Joint. That includes alcohol. So that's a significant contribution.
That's a good one.
For those two restaurants.
Yeah. And you need to get there early to those. They are packed all day long.
Absolutely. A lot of folks, too, are going at lunch and dinner. I know I'm going to lunch at Lola's.
Mm-hmm.
Buy a lunch, Melissa.
Hey, I'm there. I don't think I've ever had lunch with you now that I think about
dinner,
it.
Dinner, yes.
All right, we got to do this then. Let's do this. So here are some of the other places. The Garage on Post Street, the Taste Buds Express Food Truck, Derby on Park, lunch and dinner on Thursday goes to Dining Out for Life, Rain Dogs right across the street, dinner. The Espeto Brazilian Steakhouse, BB's Restaurant, lunch and dinner, Matthew's Restaurant. Now, if you really want to spend a little money, you could go to Matthew's on Thursday night and support this cause.
Really have an anniversary coming up or a birthday or celebrating
something.
Oh,
and something. It's very delicious.
It is. It's wonderful.
And lots of more affordable options if that does not fit your budget, like M Shack and Riverside, Hamburger Mary's, the Moondog Pie House, Arden's Cafe, Restaurant Orsay, another great place. The Pizza Palace in San Marco, they include alcohol receipts, Black Sheep, and many, many more. You can look on the website at nfanjax.org to get the full list. And Donna, can you explain, once you bring in these proceeds from Dining Out for Life, how will the funds be used?
Well, 100% of what we make that day stays right here in Jacksonville to help our community. And most of it will go to our Mary H. Lewis food pantry. We'll buy school supplies for children that can't get supplies in September. Fans in the summer, blankets in the winter, just all those little things that sometimes some of us take for granted that we can afford to go out and buy, but are so necessary to keep us warm, fed. So that's where all that money's going to go, every bit of it.
And
none of it will go to admin.
$35,000 last year.
That's how much you raised last year.
Yes, 6,000 people participated last year.
And we want to get a higher number this year because, as we've talked about many times on this program, Duval County has a higher than average rate of HIV and AIDS.
We do.
Yeah.
We do. And in the state, we're ranked number 4 for HIV, 5 for AIDS. But in the country, our HIV incidence rate 3rd in the nation.
And what do we know about that? The health department has studied this. What do we know about what's driving these numbers in our city?
Well, lack of education,
mm-hmm.
Our economy here, income is very low for our area. All of those are factors.
And 20-somethings, Melissa, the highest, the group with the highest number of new infection rates. And I've heard some disturbing talk recently that, you know, we've been talking about the increase in opioids and heroin use.
Yeah.
That we might start seeing some increase in HIV numbers stemming from that as
from
well.
From use of needles.
Yes.
Yeah, it is a serious ongoing public health concern. And it's a myth to think that this issue has been solved because there are now medications that help people live with this rather than die.
Yeah? Right, you do live with it, but it's still very expensive.
Yeah.
And the side effects are still bad in many, many cases. The long-term effects of taking any medication is hard on the liver, the kidneys.
But Melissa, that's a really good point because a lot of people, there's some experts think that people aren't afraid like they used to be of dying of AIDS because fewer people do because the medications, because the technology has increased. So
people
they might aren't
become
as,
more reckless
aren't
in their
as
behavior.
Afraid of it as yeah. they were because they know they can live the rest of their lives with it as long as they get treatment.
And so the Northeast Florida AIDS Network works very hard to educate people and make them aware of the risks and help people if they are HIV positive as well.
Yes, we have a monthly community education luncheon. It's the last Friday of every month, and we're willing to go to any group and talk to them about prevention and any education. All you got to do is give our office a call at 356-1612. We'll come out to you. We'll bring you condoms if we can hand them out, all kinds of pamphlets, and we'll talk to you.
In the meantime, you can support the Northeast Florida AIDS Network by simply going out to eat this week. Let's give the details one more time. It's Thursday.
It is Thursday all day.
All day Thursday lunch. Some restaurants are doing lunch and dinner, some just lunch, some just dinner. But there are so many to pick from.
There is. Carmine's and Lola's Burrito Joint, both of them donating half their proceeds for the entire day, including alcohol receipts, to the Northeast Florida AIDS Network and Dining Out for Life.
So make sure you have an appetizer, an entree, and dessert that day. Treat yourself.
And many, yes. And several drinks. No,
skip the diet Thursday.
But if there's another place you want to visit on Thursday, just, you know, if it's part of your normal routine to go to lunch, pick one of these restaurants on Thursday. There are so many good ones to choose from. Go to nfanjax.org, nfanjax.org. Or if you think, I think I'd rather go out to dinner, look at the list and have a nice dinner out on Thursday. You will be dining out for life. And we thank you both so much for being with us. Let's hope for even more money raised this time around.
Thank you for your support, Melissa, as always.
Donna Fuchs with Northeast Florida AIDS Network and Paige Kelton, a spokesperson for this cause. She, of course, is with Action News. We're back in a moment with Cole Pepper and a look ahead to the NFL draft.
Join WJCT on April 26th at 6 p.m. for a free preview and panel discussion of the new documentary, The Armor of Light. The film follows an evangelical minister and an African-American mother whose son was murdered as they find common ground in the fight against the rising tide of gun violence in America. Guests include Lucy McBath, mother of Jordan Davis, and national spokesperson, Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in America. The event is free, but registration is required. Go to wjct.org/events to RSVP.
As Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton didn't always agree with President Obama. On the next Fresh Air, we get an insider's look at their complex relationship from journalist Mark Landler.
I really see the two of them as almost representing two poles of thought of America's role in the world.
Landler says she was often the hawk, his approach more restrained. Landler's new book is Alter Egos. Join us.
Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
I'm David Luckin, host of the Electro Lounge, inviting you to join me Tuesday through Saturday nights on 89.9 when we bring you music from around the world. All styles played, all songs considered. Join me for the Electro Lounge, Tuesday through Saturday nights.
Welcome back. Well, finally, this hour, it's draft week. If you're an NFL fan, you know that. The Jaguars just about ready to make their picks.
I'm a
a pepper, he's a pepper, she's a pepper, we're a pepper, wouldn't you like to be a pepper too?
With more on the draft, the Armada, the Sharks and Suns, and more, here's our own Cole Pepper. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. It is draft week, and that means that all eyes will be focused on the NFL teams around the league to see what they're going to do. Now, we have a pretty strong idea what the first two picks are going to be. They'll be quarterback, quarterback. That's because teams have traded up to those picks, and you usually don't see that unless they've targeted a quarterback. And there are two quarterbacks available. We talked a little bit about this last week.
Right.
Carson Wentz. From North Dakota State, and Jared Goff from Cal. In some order, we'll go one and two. Then the interesting questions happen, and the Jaguars sit at number five. Now, the most common thought is that they'll wind up with UCLA linebacker Miles Jack. The Jaguars brass went out to Los Angeles last week to check on his knee. He had a knee injury last year. We don't know the results of it. We do know that at his workout, he jumped 40 inches in the vertical leap.
Jeez.
Sounds like a good knee to me, but there can be other issues about how will it hold up over time and cutting left and right and that sort of thing. But he's a tremendous athlete and would almost certainly get a lot of playing time as a rookie right away on that defense, try to bolster the area that was really the focus for the Jaguars in the offseason. However, there are other guys they could pick, including the possibility of trading back. And in fact, Sports Illustrated's Peter King had his mock draft out today and has the Jaguars trading back to the middle of the first round in a deal with the Titans and taking Malcolm Floyd, the Georgia outside linebacker, pass rusher, kind of multi-use guy. And he would also fit for the Jaguars in terms of a very good athlete, guy who's played at a high level. So most everybody thinks the Jaguars will take defense. Could be Miles Jack, Jalen Ramsey of Florida State if he's available, the safety. DeForest Buckner, the Oregon defensive end, a big defensive end, he's a possibility as well. But there's one offensive player they could wind up taking, depending on how things shake out, and that's Laremy Tunsil, the offensive tackle from Ole Miss. Tunsil's from Lake City, and some think he's the best player in the draft. He's a left tackle, though.
What do you think?
I don't think he's the best player in the draft, but he's certainly one of the top three or four. And there are, you know, the Jaguars have Luke Jokel, who they invested the second pick in the draft 3 years ago with at left tackle. They also brought in Kelvin Beachum, a free agent in the offseason from Pittsburgh, to play that position. So there's a lot of people at that spot who may potentially start, and you wonder if they would take a flyer on a guy who may not start right away, even though it seems that that's an area, that's a position they could certainly upgrade.
Well, we'll have to keep our eyes on it, as I know you will. In the meantime, as we always point out, you're the voice and face of the Armada, and they continue to search for a win on the road.
Yeah, last year they went through the whole season without winning away. This year they've had two matches away, losing to the defending champions in New York to open the season. And then Saturday in Fort Lauderdale, they got an early lead on Matt Boehner's first goal as a member of the Armada. It looked like they might be able to hold on, especially when Fort Lauderdale went down a man after getting two yellow cards on one of their midfielders. But they couldn't hang on. Fort Lauderdale scored the equalizer, 1-1. They get a point on the road, which is not a bad thing in soccer. If you can get the draws on the road and win at home, you're going to do very well. It's the first time, in fact, the Armada have ever taken a point from a draw with Fort Lauderdale. They lost all three times they played last year. But the return home is going to be a welcome one to Community First Park next Wednesday, May the 4th.
May the 4th be with you.
May the 4th
Can
be with you.
Can I say that?
Yes, it is Star Wars night, too.
Yes.
I may have to break out the Jedi robes for that one.
Are you going to dress up?
I don't know. I haven't decided yet, but I think I
Please
certainly
Please tell me the answer is yes.
Well, we'll see, but I will certainly spice up the broadcast with some Star Wars lingo
as it
goes, and I hope nobody kicks BB-8 into the goal.
Well, that is reason enough to come out and see the Armada. I really, really will pay cash money to see you in costume.
Well,
I'm just saying that out loud.
If there's cash money involved, we may have to discuss this with the Jedi Council.
Okay, let's talk about the Sharks and the Sun. Both playing over the last couple of days. An overtime thriller for the Sharks.
Yeah, first time ever an overtime game at home for the Sharks in their history. It was a wild one. They lost 75-67 to Arizona on a last-second interception return for a touchdown. And Sharks quarterback Tommy Grady, 8 touchdown passes in the game and just the one interception, but it was a costly one. Sharks are now 1-3. They travel to Tampa Bay next. They won't be back home until May the 21st. And the Suns, cooked by the Biscuits, 9-7 yesterday in Montgomery. They're now 8-10 on the season. I love when they play the Biscuits. So many puns.
I love that name. They're the Biscuits.
The Biscuits.
It's the best.
How about that?
Yeah.
And they have two more games in Alabama before they come back home to start a quick five-game set on Thursday.
And then, last but not least, you were the maestro, of course, of a fabulous event over the weekend, Saturday's 8th Annual Jacksonville Backyard BBQ Championships to benefit Daniel Kids. And a tasty time was had by all.
Yeah, we really appreciate everybody who came out and participated. Karen Fagans was among the...
our own WJCTs.
Celebrity judges. And the pro division winners went down to a tiebreaker, Melissa.
Mm.
So we you have chicken, ribs, and pork
right.
to compete in. And they were dead tied, flat-footed tied after all those. So we had to go to ribs score as the tiebreaker. It's the first tiebreaker.
How does that work?
Well, you go to the, you know, who has the best score in ribs.
Oh, okay, so, okay.
And the Back 9 Q crew wins the tiebreaker over Jams BBQ. And but it's really about the backyard teams. And we crown the winner at the end of every contest as the amateur king or queen
right.
of Jacksonville Barbecue. And this year, Jones and Four BBQ got the win, and for the first time ever, it was a woman heading up the cooking team that took the crown. So we have a queen of Jacksonville Amateur Barbecue.
That doesn't surprise me at all.
Well, you know, a lot of, I mean, it's rare.
I love it.
It's rare in terms of just sort of the total numbers of teams. Most of them are captained by men.
Mm-hmm.
Some are entirely male teams, but this one had the feminine touch, and when you have a barbecue team with you know, pink lettering on the shirts, you know there's something special.
That's awesome, and all the money going toward Daniel Kids, of course. We'll have to wait a whole year for that to come around again, but so glad that it went well, and follow Cole on Twitter for all your sports news and notes, at Cole Pepper. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Melissa.
And that's our show. Thanks so much for listening. Our producer is Sean Birch, Michelle Corum running the board this morning. The show theme composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chevchik. Diane Reams up next with a look at the rising suicide rate in the U.S., what's behind the alarming statistics, and what should be done to reduce the number of suicides in America. That's coming up. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.